The force has a dark and a light side. That's black magic and white magic. The doorway into the occult is an altered state of consciousness. Let the force take over. That's an altered state of consciousness. Yoda is a yogi.
And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. We'd rather reprove them.
Ahsoka means love and light.
Welcome to Conspiracy in the Force, Season 3, Star Wars in the New Age Deception. With me, Conspiracy Kyle.
All things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Hey, Conspiracy Kyle here. Today's episode is a special episode. This is an interview I did with Charlie Robinson on his TNT Radio Live show that he does every Saturday. Me and Charlie have talked many times in the past. In fact, he even wrote the foreword to my book, Intergalactic Totalitarianism, which came out in 2021. So we talk a little bit more about the book. And then we also talk about some current events in Star Wars and how Star Wars has changed over time under this new Disney ownership. And we get into a whole lot of other things. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I'll put links in this episode to Charlie's show and the TNT Radio Network because they have a lot of good shows over there. So God bless.
Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
What a crazy time to be alive.
Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
From the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, my name is Charlie Robinson. Thanks for hanging out and getting weird with me for the next 2 hours. If you want to connect with me, you can do so through email. CharlieRobinson at tntradio.live is the best place to do that. You can check out my work at Macro Aggressions in audio format, wherever podcast format. Oh, I don't know. How about Rockfin? That's a good spot for it. If you want to connect with me, my website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Sad news to start off the day, waking up to hear the passing of the great Jimmy Buffett. Boy, I'll tell you, I've been a parrot head for 30 years and been thinking a lot about a line from Jimmy Buffett song, especially with regard to the 3 years of COVID, where you get a bunch of people trying to, you know, a 300 pound person trying to lecture you about wearing a mask because it's for their health and safety, right? They're so concerned about their health. All of a sudden, there's a great line from a Jimmy Buffett song. It says, "I treat my body like a temple. You treat yours like a tent." So to all you parrot heads out there that are sad today like me, well, that old pirate sailed on to greener pastures. Hey, we've got Alex Cranier from the Naked Hedgie joining us in hour number two. And hour number one, I'll tell you what, I've had the pleasure of having Conspiracy Kyle on my Macro Aggression show on a couple of occasions. He is the author of a book called A Conspiracy in the Force, and which he was nice enough to have me write the foreword to. And I'll tell you what, for all of you Star Wars geeks out there, think that that's just a nice science fiction movie. Well, I'll tell you what Kyle has done is dig into the deeper aspects of the Star Wars franchise. And what he's found is that you would be surprised to see how well it lines up and how fascinating the storylines mimic Roman empires, Greek mythology, things like that. So without further ado, let's bring him in, everybody. He's the host of A Conspiracy in the Force. Ladies and gentlemen, Conspiracy Kyle. Hey, Kyle, how are you?
Hey, Charlie, good. How about yourself?
I'm great, man. Wow, where do we start? Because I'll tell you, when you and I first connected a couple years ago, you talked to me, you said, "I've got this podcast and I'm connecting the similarities between the Star Wars franchise and like the New World Order concept, you know, the Empire, the Galactic Empire and all of these things." And the more I started to think about this, the more I realized
wow, you know, they're telling us in these movies, what happens, how the world works, how government actions, false flag. I mean, it's all dirty politicians, corrupt trade unions and things like that. And as a kid, you watch Star Wars and you get Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader and R2-D2, and you're watching one version of the movie. And as an adult, now I have kids, you have kids too, Kyle. You go back, you watch this movie a second time, knowing what you know now, and boy, I'll tell you, it's a different movie to me. How'd you come across, what was your inspiration for launching this? Because I think it is one of the most creative podcasts out there, and you've been doing it for a while now, and I really think I think people should check it out. But how'd you even come across this as a concept?
Well, you know, I've always been a big fan of like the Star Wars prequel movies, and I think there's going to be a resurgence in people that enjoy those based on what has come out recently from Disney. I think people will look a little bit more fondly on what Lucas came out with, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when he said, you know, 15, 20 years after he had created those original movies, he said, let me go back and kind of tell you guys how we got here. Because when you see the original trilogy, you see black and white, right? You see the Empire, evil. You see this rebellion, good, right? And that's very basic concept. And what he wanted to do was go back and tell you, well, how did we get here? And I think you would agree, and a lot of people would agree, you know, that's those stories throughout history are fascinating on how societies evolve into something that is drastically different than the intention was. And he went back and told the story of how. And we'll probably talk about kind of some of the newer stuff later, Charlie, but, you know, one of the threads I've seen throughout Star Wars, even surprisingly with even the Disney era, is that whether it's George Lucas or some of the newer creators, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, who've been helming a lot of new stuff, they all have a pretty large disdain for government in general, in all of its various machinations. And, you know, so as I was rewatching these prequel movies a few years ago, I will say one of the things that people have been a drawback for a lot of people as well, the dialogue's not that great. Some of the stuff in it is too great. They use too much CGI green screen stuff. And I agree with all those criticisms. But as I started watching them, like late 2019, this was just probably several months before COVID, I started watching these movies again. I said, there's something a little bit deeper going on here. And it's when you read, like, if you read the books that accompany the prequel movies, you really see a lot more about how this control mechanism that was soon to be Emperor Palpatine manipulates the system. And, you know, as I was coming up with this concept, then all the COVID stuff hit, you know, March 2020. I'm like, oh my goodness, it's really playing out where you see somebody that they harness a problem, right? A big issue, a crisis, I think, as I talk about in the book, going on. And then they wield that crisis to create consent for, you know, them to receive more power and the people to receive less power. And ultimately, it ends up in control. So I talk about in my book, you know, crisis, consent, and control, kind of your problem, reaction, solution kind of thing there. So, and then the Charlie, I think the biggest thing that really prompted me for the podcast, one of my first episodes, was about a parallel to Nazi Germany, about, you know, the brown shirts and how Hitler, he had all these people help him rise to power. And then when he rose to power, he's like, well, we don't need those people anymore. You know, you're quote unquote useful idiots. And that's, you know, well known in history that those people know too much. You got to wipe those people out. And, you know, the same thing happened at the end of the prequel trilogy. When Palpatine finally came to power, all of the military, business, corporate leaders that helped him rise to power, he said, well, thank you for your help, but I'm going to take it from here, wipe all you guys out. We can't let anybody know all the manipulation and crap we did to get here. So when I saw stuff like that, I'm like, oh my goodness. It hasn't been, you're right, this concept hasn't really been talked about too much. Most people talk about the prequels in terms of the cinema itself, in how the movies and the stories kind of fall short. But I was like looking a little bit deeper. I'm like, he was really trying to tell a really serious story here that, you're right, it connects on a few levels. There's a lot of action sequences, but there's also a lot of political drama. You know, I think the opening crawl to episode one says something to the effect of, you know, this all started because of the taxation of trade routes, you know, something that your average 10-year-old would have no idea was going on. But, you know, for someone like you or me, we can see how this stuff happens. You know, there's a tax dispute. Yeah. It leads to a army invasion. It leads to a war. It leads to emergency power, you know, legislation in several years later. Then you have a dictator in place. So it was a really interesting concept, and I wanted to approach it from that angle, because a lot of people didn't really talk about it in that way.
That could never happen here. We're America.
As we slowly creep into the authoritarian. Yeah, it's been, whether you're talking about Star Wars and A New Hope, the very first movie that came out, where you see this the hero's journey, right? From Greek mythology, that Luke is forced to leave and go on this quest and is unsure of how it will turn out. He receives guidance from an older person, Obi-Wan, that can help him understand what his mission is. And along this way, people are inserted into his path that help him, and then they fall off along the way. And so you saw that Luke is pulled from Greek mythology. He clearly had an understanding of the Roman Empire, maybe even borrowed the term the empire. And you see, I've even heard him say in interviews when he was talking about the pacing for some of the Millennium Falcon versus TIE fighter scenes, when Han Solo and Luke Skywalker are trying to fend off the TIE fighters that are attacking them. He was having a hard time getting it right, getting the pacing right. And so what he did was he watched World War II documentaries and saw how the gunners in those in the B-52s were having to fight off, you know, invading fighter jets or fighter planes. So he understood that there was a lot of sort of history that he could pull from in order to make this futuristic film. And so when you sit down and watch Star Wars, there's something very familiar about it in a way, because you feel that you've seen this kind of you've never seen anything quite like it, with the technology in 1977 when that came out. It was unlike anything you'd ever seen, but there was a comfort in feeling that like, oh, I understand these concepts. These concepts are not completely unknown to us. And now, as somebody that can take a look back from 2023, boy, you know, I mean, the Emperor Palpatine character later on comes to power, and he starts making promises in the Galactic Senate, we're talking about, well, if you bestow upon me these powers temporarily, I promise that I will give them back when the time comes. And you just watch this and you go, oh, I know, I've heard this lie before. I mean, this is every lie we get, right, Kyle? Yeah. Like as we're being suckered into another war. Okay, these are temporary measures. We're gonna, you know, we're not gonna make you take off your shoes to get on an airplane forever, Kyle. That would be crazy, right?
yeah, that's a good analogy. You know, the state of emergency. I think every year since 2001, I think they've reinstated the terrorism, you know, emergency act for another year. I don't know if that's happened the last year or two, but I know for many, many years they would re-up that 1 year renewal of our scaredness of terrorism. And yeah, Palpatine says, you know, I promise I will give these back whenever the threat is over. And then of course, what we know happens is the threat just switches to something else. Even if that threat ends, they will create a new threat, right? So it was terrorism, then it was COVID, then it's Ukraine, and then it's gonna be COVID again, apparently. So it just, these things go on and on and on. And, you know, Charlie, one of the recent things I've been thinking about is, you know, fast forwarding from that time period of the Emperor to after the Emperor is gone. One thing that I will credit some of the new Star Wars, and there's a lot of things we'll probably critique, I'm sure we'll probably talk about later, a lot of newer stuff that is just complete garbage that they're doing with the franchise. But one thing that they started doing recently is showing, okay, so they expended all this effort to take out the Emperor. Okay, then what? And the then what is the government that we've seen that's come out of that is also incompetent in their own way. So, you know, one, what, you know, Carolyn, one meme I saw, and you probably saw this meme, is several years ago. They showed this meme of the original three movies. So they showed a picture of A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And on A New Hope, they put the picture of Obama. Okay. So Obama was the New Hope. And it says Empire Strikes Back. There's Trump. Uh-oh, here comes the big bad guy. And then they showed Return of the Jedi. Well, here's Joe Biden here. He's going to set it all straight. Well, if that's the case, the incompetent republic we've seen that rise out of the empire is very equivalent to what we're seeing now in 2023. I mean, in the new Mandalorian series, while there is some really terrible stuff that I know you and I have talked about, they show that this new republic government is instituting like re-education camps or like re-education treatment for people that previously had imperial leanings. Okay, so you're getting into some, you know, 1984 type area there where you are trying to thought control people because they had wrong think, you know. So you even see in this new republic that there's a lot of infighting, there's a lot of other stuff. And Charlie, one funny thing I saw in a new show, they were talking about ex-imperials that were staffing this new Republic shipyard. And they said, well, we found out they were still loyal to the empire. And a senator said, that can't be true. They swore an oath of loyalty to the Republic. How could they possibly still have loyalty to the empire? It's like, well, that's not how it works. You can't manufacture consent, and you can't manufacture, loyalty. It doesn't really work that way. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on. There's definitely a lot of, you know, anti-government type stuff in a lot of these Star Wars, in all of its various machinations that the government has taken hold of.
Well, I'm sure Klaus Schwab is deeply disappointed that he was not cast as Emperor Palpatine. He would have been a good fit for that. And I did hear a rumor that the Empire's slogan originally was "You'll own nothing and you'll be happy," but I cannot confirm that. But
sounds about right.
It seems like it sounds about right. We'll be back with Conspiracy Kyle on the other side of this break. This is TNT Radio.
Today's conversation, Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
We're back with Conspiracy Kyle from A Conspiracy in the Force. I'll tell you, if you think Star Wars is just for kids, go back and rewatch the series, all of them, really, as an adult and see what you see. Because I think that people will come at this from a different angle. I think the Galactic Empire is so obviously, a representation of other empires that have come before us. The stormtrooper Nazi concept is so obvious. It's almost goes without saying. But there's other components to this that I started to notice watching it a secondary time after, you know, with my little conspiratorial brain now and my tinfoil hat firmly on. I start to notice things like conquering planets for resources. We would never do that, Kyle. We would never go into a country or a planet and treat the indigenous people poorly and steal all their resources and use them. And yet we see this not just in the prequels, not just in the new ones, but even in sort of the spinoffs. Rogue One did a pretty good job of showing them mining a planet for an ingredient that was needed to make the beam powerful enough for the Death Star to destroy planets. So you start to see, okay, these are concepts that are taking place a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But really, are they, Kyle? Because I feel like a lot of the messages that were shown here, conquering, subjugating indigenous people, you know, building robot armies, some of this are tactics that we've used in the past, and some of it is predictive programming to get us ready for what's coming in the future. I mean, I'll tell you, when I watch these Star Wars, I don't really enjoy it so much as I feel like I've got a notepad and I'm taking notes, maybe mentally, to try and keep track of all of the storylines that are going in the background. Like, what did you think about this?
let's use Rogue One as an example, because the showing of them stealing resources from a planet, to me, I mean, cobalt in the Democratic Republic of Congo, anyone?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, and it was in there was another tie-in comic that kind of had the same kind of idea as well, where the Empire, and I think some of the animated series as well, where the Empire would go to these planets, and it would start off in a diplomatic fashion. And Charlie, you know, it had so many shades of that, you know, Confessions of an Economic Hitman book that you'd referred to me and many others, which is a great book to show what the U.S. does around the world to, you know, countries and places where they need to mine stuff. And, you know, the Empire would go there somewhat diplomatically. And if the people would work with them, then it was okay. But if not, then they would bring in the stormtroopers, and then they would take it regardless. So they were going to get it one way or another. And even the ones that thought they were playing ball end up getting screwed in the end, because that's just how it works. But, yeah, you see that a lot with the Empire, how they go to all these planets, they find things, find resources, and just use it and subjugate the people for whatever they need. And like I said, they try to do it diplomatically at first, but ultimately people find out that that's not really the case. And by then it's pretty much too late. They're going to get what they want anyways.
Yeah, you could partner with a Lando Calrissian, right? In the strong man of the region, the president, so to speak, of the planet, and say, hey, let's do this gas deal, you know? And if the gas deal is, you know, then what you find is partway through this gas deal, I've changed the terms. Pray I don't alter them any further, is what Darth Vader says to them. So you even see tactics of this American empire, the way we've done this. And you mentioned John Perkins of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That book changed my life. When I read that, I understood, oh, wait a second. This is how you can make entire countries do things operating against their own self-interest, is you get them in a situation where they have no choice but to play ball with the Empire. Play ball, you know. Perkins explained it very clearly. You know, first we come and we try to bribe them. First we try to work with them, and we show them how much money they will make. And if that doesn't work, then we try to bribe them. And if that doesn't work, then we send in the jackals, the CIA jackals, as he said. And that's when airplanes start exploding with people on them. So this is the tactic that John Perkins described in Confessions of an Economic Hitman back in the early 2000s. And this is the way that the Empire has treated, I guess, colonies, but planets that they wanted to take over. We see the same tactics being used again and again. But what about the predictive programming side of things when you start to see clone armies, right? Now, to us in this current day, the idea of a Boba Fett type of person being cloned into, you know, millions of soldiers that have his sort of skill set, that sounds, you know, that's straight Alex Jones, right? That's craziness. But how far away are we really, Kyle, from having clone art? We've already got the concept of drones being used and swarms of drones. God knows what DARPA's working on these days. And so are we really that far away from clone armies?
Oh boy, I hope not. It's a very scary concept. There's been a lot of crazy machinations that people have been doing with biology, and, you know, messing with, you know, what God intended as male and female and whatever else is going on. I would not be surprised if there's something crazy like that. I would say the closer thing we'll get is probably something like what we see in RoboCop, and like what they're doing over at, you know, Boston Dynamics or whatever up there, where you've probably seen the videos of those robot dogs or whatever. So, probably the concept of what it'll be, rather than clones, kind of these robotic type super soldiers, which, you know, do they try to infect that with DNA or something? I'm not sure, but, you know, I know we've talked a lot about RoboCop before. And when you talk about predictive programming, that's another one that, it presents the predictive programming, and shows it kind of in a few different ways. I think, you know, for one, It's the, well, this is meant to help us. You know, this is meant to, you know, take the onus off of, you know, the actual police force or whatever. And we can have these robotic ones out there 24/7. It's like, well then, but what data is fed into that? You know, with all the crazy stuff going on with artificial intelligence recently, who knows how bad that could go when you have some sort of robotic police force out there trying to monitor people. Then you get into whole Minority Report pre-crime type stuff, and you know, all that stuff has been out in books for 50, 60, 70 years. I think we're seeing a lot of that in fruition now.
Yeah, for sure. Philip K. Dick was right about a lot of this stuff. But I'll tell you, if the clones turn out to be non-binary, though, that would be a big win for Disney, because we know Disney loves this, right? Something tells me that in these future episodes, we're going to get written in that all the clones are non-binary and that they're non-gender conforming. What do you make of Disney bastardizing this franchise? I mean, you mentioned they brought in Dave Filoni and they brought in Jon Favreau, who've done a good job. But, you know, listen, Jon Favreau is also a member of the World Economic Forum. So I have that in the back of my mind thinking, well, you know, that's not the greatest thing. But he did direct and write Swingers. So that, I think maybe those two offset one another, hopefully. I don't know. That's my calculation, at least. But Disney seems to be hell-bent on destroying this brand. We've started to see a pivot. Maybe it's woke Disney started a while ago, but we saw it bleed into the Star Wars franchise, maybe most notably with the firing of Gina Carano from Mandalorian for expressing views that I thought were pretty mild. We saw the elevation of Pedro Pascal, the actor who plays the Mandalorian, because he sort of cheerleaded for these, woke ideologies, or maybe he hated the proper candidate for president or whatever. But it feels like Disney, who has lost, whose stock is at the lowest point it's been in the last 9 years, and deservingly so, it seems like they are intent on piling huge mountains of money in their, you know, in their parking lot and lighting it on fire with regard to the Disney franchise. What do you think it's going to take to turn this around, or is the Disney franchise lost?
Yeah, it's been totally co-opted by the woke brigades. I mean, if you want to, you know, I'll prove it to anybody listening here. Go to, you know, if anybody here is on Twitter, are we supposed to call it Twitter? I don't know. I'm going to call it Twitter. Yeah. Go to the Star Wars main Twitter page and look at the profiles of anybody that likes any of the posts that they've made. And I promise you, 70-80% people with pronouns, people with the pro-Ukraine, people with bi, trans, non-gender fluid, whatever. So and mind you, I acknowledge some of that is probably bot activity, but they are gearing their product now towards a younger generation, Charlie. It's almost as if, you know, people like you and me, they said, well, these people aren't really going to be into it for too much longer because we're getting older. So let's try to appeal to this younger generation. But what they don't realize is the younger generation, all of them aren't focused on these crazy gender confused identity stuff. You know, they make the assumption that that's the case. And Charlie, I just think it's set to kind of crash and burn. I mean, what's going on right now is, you know, something I kind of loosely call like the Netflix season 3 effect. And what I mean by that is, and this is why I don't watch any Netflix shows anymore, because they all do this same thing where they rope you in with a compelling show, season 1, season 2. By the time you get to probably about season 3, you know, two things happen more often than not. The one is that they make one of the strong male protagonists a villain, and then one of the characters becomes gay or trans or whatever. Like, they do this every single time. And what happened in The Mandalorian is case in point to this. You know, the first two seasons, incredible filmmaking, had all those beats, Charlie, you know, back to the original trilogy, all the same feels, all the characters, all the locations. It hit all the right beats for me personally.
Yeah.
And a lot of people. When you get to season three, they introduce, well, a character named Bo-Katan, who, you know, she was an animated character from shows of years past, but they slowly, as the season went along, said, well, look, maybe she's the Mandalorian. It's like, no, that's not how it works. You've called this one character the Mandalorian the entire time, and now you're trying to subjugate and say, like, well, she's somewhat the main character now, and basically giving him a back seat. It's this narrative, which I kind of call, like, you know, deconstruction. And, you know, I'm a Christian, and you see this kind of happening in churches nowadays, where they kind of take what the Bible has said and said, well, maybe it really meant X instead of Y. And you see that going on with Luke Skywalker in Star Wars as well, where in the sequel trilogies, they just made him a complete buffoon. You know, somebody that, you know, you and me had grown up kind of, he was this kind of heroic character, right? He kind of rose out of obscurity and kind of faced all these challenges. And then 30 years later, he's just a crotchety old man who has lost all purpose and direction in his life.
Yeah.
And really, that's a narrative you see with pretty much every male character. I don't know, Charlie, if you've seen the new Indiana Jones movie. I don't recommend it.
No.
I will... I saw it because, you know, I like the character, but it's the same exact thing. They made him some crotchety, curmudgeon-y type character that, you know, a young whippersnapper female character had to come and come alongside of him and take him on an adventure and kind of show him the ropes. So I honestly think, Charlie, that I don't see that there's a way that this rebounds because, you know, for two reasons. For one, there's the woke aspect where they're trying to, regardless of how unprofitable it is, it's almost like they have a gun to their head saying you kind of need to push all these agendas if you want to stay in business. And then for two, you know, I love Star Wars, it's just gotten too complex, and there's too many timelines and there's too many eras of stuff, you know, that it's just hard even for an average fan to keep track of anymore. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's like they're trying to destroy the, well, I'll, let me put it this way. They're trying to destroy the franchise that you and me know. What they want to do is in the ashes of that, build the Disney Star Wars franchise, because that's what they have personally created. Like, that is their empire. You know, if you ever see visuals of, like, the Star Wars parks, like at Disney World or whatever, you don't see any classic characters there. You don't see your Darth Vader. You don't see a Luke Skywalker. You may see the Mandalorian. You may see some of the newer characters, but you don't get any of that classic stuff because they almost feel like they can do it. They can do it better. And it's really just deconstructing the franchise to a certain way where it's, after the next few years, it's probably not even going to be recognizable to what me and you know.
Yeah, well, it's true. Once Disney gets their hands on it, I mean, they're making, right now, they're doing a remake of, you know, Snow Off-White with the seven vertically challenged, non-binary, definitely not dwarves. And it's hasn't even come out yet. And already people are like, nope, not going, not interested, not going to see it. The new Star Wars series came out, the Ahsoka, with the female lead, and I haven't watched it yet. I don't even know if it's out yet. I'm assuming it's out.
Yeah.
But I watched the trailer for it. I didn't see any guys in it. It's just all women in it.
Yeah. Now,
and again, maybe that's fine. Maybe it's a well done story, but it feels forced. And it feels like it's getting away from the Force, and it feels like it's getting into an agenda. And I'll tell you,
yes,
I understand that there's going to be agendas, but when I'm trying to, you know, you're watching these movies. These are science fiction movies. You're watching them to escape for a little bit from reality, to go to a different place, a different time, a different planet, a different way of viewing everything. And I don't want to be bombarded with cultural messaging and woke ideology when I'm trying to watch a science fiction movie. I spot it immediately. it rubs me the wrong way instantly. And I think that there was some, I forget what movie it was. There was a really popular movie that came out on Netflix. And, you know, Netflix behind the scenes has all the analytics, and they can sort of tell like how long a person watches the show, and they can tell, you know, when they stop watching the show. And there was, and I forget exactly what it was, but I want to say it was like a Marvel movie, or it was something like that. Highly watched movie. And about 22 minutes into it, there was, for no good reason, like inserted into the storyline, a gay kiss. And they showed that the analytics behind it showed that like 87% of the people watching the show turned it off right after that. And I thought, that's what I'm talking about, you know. And I wish I knew the details of it. God, I have to find it. But that's what I'm talking about. It's not just you and me. I think there's a lot of people out there that feel the same way. Like, get this stuff out of our, off of our television. I came here to see science fiction. I didn't come here to get a lecture on pronouns, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there has been a lot of stuff you're seeing in this is a lot of radical feminism. And listen, you know, like male characters, female characters in movies, they all serve a purpose and they all serve a role. But this new era where all these creatives think that they're creating female empowerment that it's never existed before, I think that's completely insulting. Because look back at movies from the 70s like Star Wars, you know, look at Carrie Fisher's portrayal of Princess Leia. You know, yeah. Very strong female character. She was allegedly kind of that damsel in distress, but she was the one that, you know, let him out of there, you know, but there was no agenda behind it. It worked really well for that story. And then also, you know, you have Ripley from the Alien franchise, right? They didn't have to market their advertising as, look at this strong female character. She just was a great character. You didn't have to add that messaging if you have a great story. And you're right. So often they insert all this stuff in there and make a case of it. You know, case in point, you mentioned this Ahsoka series, which I'm begrudgingly watching against my will just because I want to see what's going on, but it's not for me, it's not great. And they made a big point after one of the first episodes. They said, look guys, this was a post from like Star Wars, the first ever lightsaber battle between two women in live action. Like, wow. The fact that you said that meant that you added that scene in the show to come out with this advertising point for it.
Yeah.
And it was a really bad lightsaber scene. that's the thing about it. It was just not a really well done scene. But they have to put that out there. So if you don't like it, well then you hate women. You hate, you know, female empowerment. And yeah, you're right. In this show, from what you've seen in the previews, you're not missing much. The only male character you see is, of course, a villain. No other really male characters of any importance whatsoever. And I think there's another male villain later in the series too. So it's, you know, I understand that, you know, in the past maybe female characters have gotten shafted a little bit, but I don't think that you fix that by you know, paint by numbers where you have to have X amount of women, X amount of people that meet this criteria, X amount of people that meet this criteria, and shoehorn that into a series. It doesn't work that way. And a lot of even actors have pushed back on this. You know, the character John Boyega, the actor John Boyega, who played Finn in the sequel trilogy. You know, he's a black actor, and you know, I think he did a really great job in the series. But they basically inserted him in for they were trying to insert him for a diversity purpose, but they didn't give his character a lot to do. His character had a lot of promise, but they didn't fully flesh out the character. And even he, you can go and look at interviews that he's done where he's been accusing Disney of racism for how they handled his character, that they basically were just using him to meet, you know, social check marks. And they could have really done a whole lot more with his character, but it's like they were almost just using him to get brownie points, which is very unfortunate because he's a very talented actor and his character had a lot of promise that they didn't fully flesh out. So yeah, there's just a lot of radical stuff going on. And you're right. I think a lot of people are just really opposed to it. Some are more, you know, vocal about it than others.
John Boyega was very helpful to them until he wasn't, right? When he wound up on that poster for the movie in China, and China went, what is this? What is this black man on the cover? Take him off, right? So what did woke Disney do for all their virtue signaling and all their bullshit? They took him off to appease the Chinese, right? Because he didn't look like a character that the Chinese general public or the movie going public would be comfortable or would be interested in watching. So he's not on the movie poster in the China version, but he is on the movie poster in the America version, which reminds me of all of these corporations that changed their Twitter handles to the rainbow flag in the month of June in America, but they don't do it to their Saudi Arabia accounts as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's funny.
Selective care about the woke agenda by Disney. We're going to be back with a final segment with Conspiracy Kyle after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is TNT Radio.
You have the power of information. Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back for the final segment with Conspiracy Kyle. Hey, Kyle, where's the best place for people to find you, to find your podcast, to find the book, and support all your work?
Sure. You can go to Twitter or Instagram. It's conspiracy_Kyle, and it's conspiracy with a K, which I've found has helped me to not get banned whenever they want to shadow ban things that have the word conspiracy in it. So you can find all my links to all my stuff there.
Great. Well, let's talk about the book a little bit. The book was fun. I mean, thank you for having me asking me to write the foreword to it, because you know I'm as big of a Star Wars geek as they come. And I love the fact that you put this out. What was your thinking behind writing this book? Because I know that podcasts do one thing and they go out to a lot of people that are familiar and comfortable with that format, but books reach a whole new demographic of people. So I loved the book. I thought it was really fun for people to check out and find these parallels between what happens in the movies and what happens in real life. And I just was curious how you even came about writing it.
Sure. So, when I started the podcast in mid 2020, kind of, you know, my style, I will say I have a very introverted personality where I typically can't like a lot of other people get on a microphone and just kind of start talking about certain topics. You know, for me, I have to kind of write stuff down and plan stuff out that way. So when I did my podcast is kind of set up that way, where I kind of write out kind of a basic script for it. And then I record it and I add my own little music and things behind it. So for me, I felt like it was kind of a little unique format. So, but anyways, as I did that, I thought, you know, if I'm gonna kind of write stuff for each of these episodes, maybe I could write something a little bit longer form. And, you know, Charlie, I'll give you credit for helping to inspire me to get there, because I think, Charlie, on your Macroaggressions podcast towards the end of 2020, you know, you put out the call and said, hey, you know, I had a great year with my podcast. I'm just looking for, you know, if anybody has any ideas for guests for 2021. And I thought, you know what? Let me just throw myself out there and see if I would be a good, guest for your podcast. Because I know you'd mentioned a lot of Star Wars references in the past. I said, hey, I have this kind of idea, you know, might be good to throw it out there on your show. And you're like, hell yeah, let's do it. And then I was like, oh crap, now I got to think of something. So up until that point, I kind of only had a basic concept of what I wanted to talk about. And then really, you know, Charlie, the preparing for the appearance on your show was kind of really where I fleshed out the outline to this book. And the concept is each of the prequel movies have a recurring pattern. You know, we talked about kind of the mythology aspect of the original trilogy. This one, they kind of have like a template that happens over and over again. And it's, there's a crisis, there's consent, and then there's control. So in the first movie, Phantom Menace, there's this trade dispute. Palpatine, as a senator, says, hey, so this is crisis. Palpatine says, hey, listen, our current leader isn't cutting it. Why don't you guys, hire me to do it? So sure enough, everybody says, okay, we'll hire him. So there's your control. You gain more control. The next movie, Attack of the Clones, something happened again. So in that, there was a new threat. There was this separatist army that Palpatine on the in the back of his mind was manipulating on the other end of the spectrum. So he says, hey, there's this army. We need to create an army of our own. There's your crisis, the consent. Okay, we'll create this army. And boom, now he has a full army at his disposal and all these emergency powers. Okay, so boom, one, two. And then in the final movie is where he kind of really, really puts the nail in the coffin. He says, okay, well, this war is over against this other separatist army, but now we got all these Jedi that really, like, they're the villains now. So that's the crisis, and he manufactures consent with the government to turn on them and take them out. And then once he has no more enemies, because they had pretty much figured out what was going on at this point way too late in the game. They said, well, we got to fight this Palpatine guy. Well, he wipes them all out. So it was, Charlie, it was really, you know, when I was planning to come talk to you about it, I kind of had this basic concept down, and I'm like, I think this would really be good in kind of a long form book. And it's something that I wanted to do for quite a while, you know, reading some of your works and a lot of other people. I thought that it was kind of a good goal to put that down on paper. So it was a fun exercise. It was a long, you know, trying exercise, Charlie, as I know you would agree with. Yep. Of writing a book and making notes and references and all that stuff. But ultimately it's a very rewarding thing. You know, it's something kind of tangible I can have. Cause you know, you can put out a podcast, you can, you know, do interviews and talk with people and stuff, but like, this is kind of a tangible thing. And as we're talking, I'm kind of holding in my hand right now, like, this was something that I was very proud of being able to do. And thank you so much, Charlie, for writing the foreword. And I definitely recommend everybody go check that out. And I think, you know, in the future, I will work on a follow-up to that. I kind of have some ideas rumbling around, but I would say, you know, it's a good way to get a lot of thoughts out there in a cohesive manner. It works for some people. Some people aren't curious about doing it. You know, one of the problems I would say, Charlie, and I think you'll agree with this, is that, I wanted to put this out there for people that typically don't really like to read, because there's a lot of people, I think, that don't really read as much as they should.
Yeah.
And I think reading is very important, but it's one of those skills that's kind of fallen by the wayside in this, you know, 15-second TikTok clip society we live in. So I wanted to kind of put something in that long format, and you know, I'm proud of it. And like I said, I'll probably work on something more there in the future. So we'll see.
It's a fantastic book. I suggest people go out and take a look at it. You get into these concepts. You talk about like the galactic version of problem, reaction, solution. You know, there's concept controlled opposition. We see that as a form of control that happens there. We, you know, I'll tell you, Kyle, I'm waiting for David Icke to write the next Star Wars series, right? Because it's got the same concepts behind it. You know, the totalitarian tiptoe. You know, how you sort of create these crises and it looks like you're fighting this enemy, but in actuality you're sort of controlling that enemy and using that as the pretext to justify, well, listen, we need to build up our defenses a little bit more right here. Rebuilding our defenses, where did I read that? The Project for New American Century, rebuilding our defenses, in 2000.
Yeah, September 2000.
Yeah, like a year later, something, a catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor happened. I remember that. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. So yeah. I mean, for people out there that think Star Wars is like, well, that's all science fiction. It is, but it's anchored in a lot of these deep state political tactics that we see. And so I think that it's worth taking another look around. I remember I went to I took a transcendental meditation class when I was in living in Las Vegas. It was a 4-day class, and I was going through it, and I was at, I think, day three, and my TM teacher was this really trippy guy. I mean, nice guy, but you know, he had like a million cuckoo clocks in his house, and he really had like 40 of them going. So it was kind of a weird thing. And I remember when we were getting into, he was explaining to me, you know, falling into this meditative state and how things will come to you. And I made this connection to it. I was almost kind of half joking. And I said, this is like the Force. And he looked at me and he said, well, you know, George Lucas was into transcendental meditation, don't you? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. And he said, yeah. He said, there's a sort of a there's a theme running through this. So the Force as an idea, Kyle, not some hocus pocus made for science fiction concept, but a real thing that lives, that exists beyond us, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of, and I've been talking about this in kind of the newest season of my podcast. You know, I kind of approach all this stuff from like a biblical perspective, and you're right. I mean, his idea was to kind of amalgamate a lot of stuff, you know, mostly I would say, you know, Hinduism, Buddhism, a lot of New Age type stuff with, which a lot of it, me personally, I have issues with. You know, if everyone wants to take a listen to my podcast, you'll kind of hear my thoughts about that from my, you know, Christian biblical perspective. But yeah, he tried to take a lot of stuff from our world and amalgamate it into this story, and creating this kind of mystical thing. You're right. So it has a lot of, I think he called himself one time, he called himself, oh, it was kind of a silly term. He called himself like a Buddhist Methodist. or something like that, you know, basically like he's kind of taking these different religious beliefs and kind of throwing them into a pot and stirring it around. And, you know, the one thing I'll say is that, you know, while I kind of disagree with like the concept of this, you know, Force from my biblical perspective, it's interesting what they're doing with the concept of Jedi in the newer Star Wars. They're where we knew it. It was this very specialized thing, whereas only a certain people could become Jedi. Right. Now they're basically saying, well, you know, anybody can. It's almost like in this post Return of the Jedi era that there's like a Jedi staffing shortage.
Well, you know? I identify as a Jedi, Kyle, these days.
Yes.
That's all it takes, so apparently. Like,
if you can swing a sword, you know, like they say in dodgeball, you know, if you can dodge a ball, you can become a Jedi.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of they're kind of watering down the overall concept and definitely making it a lot less mystical than it used to be.
Well, I'll tell you, the Empire blew up Alderaan just to show everyone else in the galaxy that they could do it. The Americans dropped a bomb on Hiroshima just to show the Russians that they could do it. You know, I feel like there's a little bit of overlap in that as well. These concepts that we've seen, the symbolism of Darth Vader, you know, the mask, the unhuman voice that comes up, you know, it's a reminder to us that, it might be science fiction and it might be something from the 70s and you might be dismissive of it as having, you know, having ties to this current political landscape. But boy, I'll tell you, there's a whole lot of symbolism in all of these movies. And whether you got turned off when Disney took over the franchise, I certainly do understand that, because they've screwed it up on many levels. Or maybe you just haven't watched the original three again. I'll tell you what, man, for those people out there that are grown up and a little bit past their Star Wars watching prime, it's worth taking another look, checking out the series just to see if you think that, you know, you can see the overlaps that we have. Conspiracy Kyle, man. I'll tell you, check out Conspiracy and the Force podcast. Go on Amazon. Amazon, the best place to find the book, Kyle?
Yep, the book's there in paperback and Kindle, and I recorded an audiobook version as well. So any of those formats.
Boy, I'll tell you, it's worth the money. Get it for your kids too. Have them take a look and see what you think about that. That's Conspiracy Kyle, everybody. We're excited to have him back. You can catch his episodes on macroaggressions in the past. He's been on a couple of times for a week.